Welcome to episode 6 of Sailing Infidels, On the Outside Looking In, The Exodus. This is the continuing tale of the Sailing Infidels and how the COVID-19 lockdowns impacted us, even in the remote and secluded paradise that had initially presented itself as our very own safe haven. It was early in March 2021. The first year of the pandemic had played out, and meanwhile, in our peaceful seclusion, so much had happened. A year earlier, we were in our normal, peaceful, happy place, and then suddenly we found ourselves standing in the midst of the wreckage after hurricane-force winds and wondering what lay ahead if we didn't take matters into our own hands. Over the course of the prior year, we witnessed the horrors of the pandemic and a side of humanity that we'd never seen before. From the comfort of our well-insulated bubble, we felt the shock, we felt the fear, we felt the anger, and at times we even laughed at it. And then we found ourselves being lied to, abused, and ignored by the very company whose property we were taking care of. A year into the pandemic, we were angry too. Not about the plandemic, the shutdown, or the mask mandates, but for our own predicament that felt very much like a conspiracy among management to trap us in such a remote and isolated place without fuel or adequate supplies for the entire winter. I was very angry. Playing over and over in my head was everything that had led us into this situation, leaving the generator running for a week, the late and shorted grocery orders, and not sending fuel, and just being so ignorant as to expect anyone to survive for 2 years on a season's leftover fuel. Even years old, still unaddressed issues such as leaving us with a shotgun with which to deal with problem bears, despite years of requests for ammunition, we still had only one slug. That is, until I had to use it to deal with a bear that was literally tearing apart buildings, trying to access food. And it wasn't the first time either. I had already dispatched a bear a few years earlier. It was all grating on me every minute of every day, all that, plus all the sacrifices we made and the work we did to help them, and then not a single drop of gratitude for that help. In fact, they actually accused me of trying to gouge them just for wanting to be compensated for the use of our boat and equipment that was saving them from having to bring fuel in midwinter at what would have been an absolutely outrageous price. If anything, we were saving them from being gouged. If it weren't for my plan, our boat, our hard work, and our willingness to endure what they had foisted upon us, they'd have had an emergency situation on their hands with stranded caretakers that only gobs of money would have been able to fix. All the while, the ticking sound of the time bomb was growing louder and louder as the days passed, and as I watched the last of the fuel disappear at a quickening pace, I knew that if they didn't act fast, we would be stuck. We would have no way out but for a miracle from Aeolus himself. Days were passing, and I was getting nothing but radio silence from head office. Finally, I snapped. I was done talking to brick walls. A decision had to be made. Since we had launched our newly built dinghy back on New Year's Day, it was no longer standing in the way of us leaving. Weather watching is a daily pastime in a place like that, and it just so happened that a nice little gift from Aeolus, the keeper of the winds, and a rarity at that time of year, was in the forecast, and, if it held true, would see us to safe harbor in Prince Rupert. If we were able to leave in time, it would give us just enough time to reach Prince Rupert safely. We really had no choice but to take advantage of it because we would be very unlikely to see another opportunity for at least a couple more months, meaning we would be out of fuel and unable to leave at all unless the company changed their miserly ways. And that just did not seem likely. They were steadfastly trying to squeeze every ounce they could from us because they thought there was no way we would leave in the middle of winter. Well, they were wrong. We needed 36 hours at minimum to reach Prince Rupert, but we would need at least 2 days to prepare cosmic debris beforehand. The weather window that was presenting itself to us was exactly 4 days long. We discussed it and committed ourselves to being ready. Wendy would start with our things in the lodge, and I would start with getting cosmic debris off her mooring. We would lend each other a hand as needed. Our planned departure was coming quickly, and the forecast is usually pretty accurate in that time frame, so we got busy the very next day. Releasing the mooring lines was a two-day affair, and I had two stern lines to deal with, and one was only accessible at the anchor end at low tide. On the first day, I released the starboard lines. It's more work than it sounds. I had a half dozen buoys attached along the length of the starboard bow line, so the float plane pilots would know that the line was there, and each of them had to be removed. After the shackles and buoys were stowed, I stretched the lines out on the dock to dry as much as possible. Then I went to the lodge to help Wendy. I needed Wendy's help to finish the mooring lines the next day. The portside bow line was attached by a chain around the trunk of a tree on shore, and because of the steep slope that it was on, that tree was inaccessible from land. Making matters more difficult, it was only accessible at high tide from the water, so I would have to stand on the bow of the company boat to reach the shackle. Wendy's job was to hold the boat. After that was done, we stowed all the lines, and then I put the internet gear back in the lodge, set it up so it was working, and then emailed my resignation to the boss and shut the internet off. I was not interested in a reply. For the rest of the day, Wendy and I worked together to get everything packed into cosmic debris, and the entire evening stowing it all away. Cosmic debris was then left with only her anchor to be lifted and a single stern line to be stowed in the morning. Finally, it was midnight, and we were setting an alarm for 5 a.m. so that we could sail out on the ebbing tide at 8 o'clock. As the eastern light crept over the mountain behind the lodge, we could see the last of the stars fading into the lightning sky. Breaks in the winter weather, such as the one we were experiencing, were always a welcome relief. Winter is very harsh on the battered coasts of Haida-Gwaii. The temperatures aren't extremely cold, and snow is not overly common, but the wind is nearly constant, and the rain only seems to stop when it turns to hail or snow. The sun disappears in early November, unable to shine above the mountains behind the lodge, and even when it does reappear in early February, the leaden skies and old-growth canopy keep it concealed most of the time. For those past 2 days, we had enjoyed the sunshine as we were, but it was bittersweet. Though we were happy to be leaving, normally we'd likely be sitting in the afternoon sunshine enjoying some beer. If we were impatient earlier in the day, we'd sometimes take some beers out in the company boat and drift around in the sunshine. Those days were idyllic, but they were soon to be found only in our memories. Our imminent departure was certainly colored with elements of sadness and anger, but also with an element of excitement. For us, there is nothing quite like the excitement of a new adventure, especially after being through what we were escaping from. We had but one single job left to do, and when you have a 73-pound anchor that has been buried in the mud from August to March, you know that job is going to be tough, and that it was.
Hell of a time getting the anchor off the ground this morning, but we persevered and got her up, and at 9:10, did you say? 9:10, she was off the ground and on the roller.
We motored out of the cove into a calm sea and nothing but blue sky. The forecast was for westerly winds all day, and so we were looking forward to sailing on a beam reach to the north end of Haida-Gwaii. It was chilly, but it was a beautiful sail. The sunny sky and gentle swell made for a very comfortable ride. However, thanks to fickle winds, the sailing was slow. All in all, though, considering the time of year it was, the conditions were amazingly calm for the North Pacific Ocean.
Okay, the 7 is just unknown. That's unacceptable.
Right in your logbook.
Hey?
Logbook.
Logbook, no.
Sails are up.
Ah, they are. The sails are up. Yes, we're sailing. Winds are fickle. On the stern, 7 knots. Not good.
Later that afternoon, we turned to the east to transit Parry Passage between Langara and Graham Islands under motor power. Unlike the last trip to Prince Rupert, this time we could enjoy the push of the incoming tide to help us through instead of having to go all the way around Langara. As we entered the pass, white horses raced us in, and as we passed through, we wondered if anyone at the main lodge was watching us slip by. We emerged into Dixon Entrance with no wind and darkening skies. We motored for several hours before catching more wind in the middle of the night, which took us nearly to Prince Rupert. As the sun came up, we were sailing in 20 to 25 knot winds on a close reach with bouncy seas. Later that morning, closer to the mainland, the wind was gone and the sun was shining brightly as we motored up into Prince Rupert Harbor. We headed straight for the dock at Cow Bay and tied up in our favorite spot. We made the trip in record time, shaving 5 hours off the average. That night, the weather window was over. Just hours after tying up at the dock, a front moved in, the temperature dropped, and the wind started to howl through the rigging. We were well protected and grateful to have made it out of Dixon Entrance ahead of the system. Cow Bay Marina is run by the federal government and is a nicely maintained facility with very reasonable prices, but there's no power on the dock to plug into, and no Wi-Fi either. The normally bustling little area of Cow Bay once again seemed deserted, except for one guy on the dock. I donned my mask as I approached him to ask about the marina office. I knew where it was, but I didn't know if it was open to the public. He told me there was probably someone there, but they weren't charging for moorage due to COVID-19, or at least, he said, no one was paying. That was good enough for me. We never went to check in, and over the 2 weeks that we were there, no one came knocking at our boat to check us in either. Now that we no longer had a working generator, our priority was to find a repair facility. We took it in for diagnosis as soon as possible. As suspected, the problem was that the inverter was destroyed by water during the storm at the lodge. The cost of a new inverter was just too much to justify, so we just bought a new generator. We bought a Yamaha this time. The Honda that we had was plagued by problems right from the point of purchase, and we weren't very heartbroken by its demise. Numbers 2 and 3 on the priorities list were ordering our new heater and getting our COVID shots. We had arrived in Prince Rupert in the middle of an outbreak of COVID-19, and it was at that time the worst COVID hotspot in British Columbia. Once that first weather system had played itself out, we settled into the typical weather of a Prince Rupert winter. Rain, then more rain, followed by rain. The change between dark gray days and dark nights was the only change there was until the rain turned from rain to snow. We hadn't given much thought to how long we would stay in Prince Rupert. We knew we were going to buy and install a wood heater, so that would take some time. And we also knew that we were going to take the infamous inside passage down the coast to get back to Vancouver Island, where we would haul out and do some final preparations for our long-awaited sail to Mexico later that year. I ordered the heater, and as soon as it came in, we got to work installing it. It was a beautiful change from the diesel heater that it was replacing. As soon as that was installed, we sold the diesel heater and our old inflatable dinghy, Space Junk, too. Naturally, during the first few days of our stay, I was responding to the many emails from our suddenly very talkative boss, Todd. In the space of our voyage to Prince Rupert, he had sent several emails expressing everything from his shock and anger that we'd quit to his fear for our safety. He also seemed to have found a sudden concern for the well-being of the lodge cat, the old long-haired flea-infested cat who has never known anything beyond the dark, dank basement of the lodge and its immediate surroundings for more than 18 years. She's the same cat for which they never bothered to buy an adequate amount of food. Well, suddenly he thought we should take her on a sailing trip to Prince Rupert for some strange reason. Those thoughtlessly hammered out knee-jerk reactionary emails were exactly the reason I wasn't interested in any replies. I replied, if for no other reason than to let them know we were still alive. I didn't bother to say anything about the cat, but I did let him know in no uncertain terms that if my final paycheck was not received or if it was not paid in full, I would file a complaint with the appropriate government agencies immediately. I was paid in full and on time. They sent someone down from the main lodge on Langara Island to secure the place, or maybe to make sure we hadn't stolen anything. I don't know for sure. But I started to get emails from him about how the company's satellite phone was not where I said it was. He never came right out and accused me of stealing it, but if it wasn't there, there would have been no other way for it to disappear. He finally gave up when I asked him to send me a picture of the bar on which we left it. I guess he couldn't figure out how to take the picture and not show the satellite phone. Once our brand new wood heater, known as the Grizzly, and which we dubbed Toklat, was installed, there was little else keeping us in Prince Rupert. There was also no real reason to leave, though. I knew one thing for sure. I was tired of all the snow. I was looking at the weather again, and later in the week, the weather looked good for going south. We would have a nice northwesterly wind to ride down to Arthur Passage, the beginning of the Inside Passage. In all the sailing back and forth from the lower mainland and Vancouver Island to Haida Gwaii, we had never done the Inside Passage, so this was a new adventure and one that we had been looking forward to for years. Over our final couple of days in Prince Rupert, we braved the blanket of wet, sloppy snow and with our cheap little folding wagon made trips to the fuel dock with jerry cans, the grocery store, the liquor store, and the hardware store. We provisioned for what we anticipated would be a 3 to 4 week trip to Port McNeil on northern Vancouver Island. It was a lot of work, and our little wagon finally started falling apart just as we finished and was left in the marina dumpster. With all the preparations taking so much time and effort, I committed one of the worst sins the sailors can commit. Never mind that it was on a Friday that we would be yet again leaving port. What was worse was that I completely lost track of the weather forecast and failed to do a last-minute forecast check. On Friday, March 26, 2021, in calm conditions with light snow, we untied from the dock, and as we slowly backed out of the marina, I looked up at an office window and saw someone watching us leave. A short while later, I received a bill via email from Cow Bay Marina. Turns out they were charging after all, and someone must have come to the dock at some time to get our boat name. It took a little more than an hour to get from the marina to the south end of the channel out of Prince Rupert, and when we got there, we were facing 20 to 25 knots of wind coming straight from the direction of the Inside Passage. We hoisted the main and furled out the Yankee, and I was able to pinch up just high enough to sail very tightly, close-hauled, and still pointing toward Arthur Passage. The seas were choppy, but not terrible. The conditions were most definitely not what we were expecting to find out there, and the fishing boat to our starboard side was not making me happy. He was going very slightly faster than we were and crowding us uncomfortably. He seemed to be on a course just a couple of degrees less than ours and maybe thinking of passing across our bow. It wasn't a large boat, and he did not have the right of way. I held my course. Eventually, he backed off and went astern of Cosmic Debris. When he was clear and we were nearing the Lawyer Islands, I decided to ease the sheets to a beam reach and make for Malacca Passage instead of Arthur. It would certainly get us out of these conditions, and maybe we could find a shelter anchorage. We entered Malacca Passage and motored down through the narrow channel on the west side of McMicking Island. Incredibly, there was cell phone coverage as we neared Lawson Harbor, and I was able to check the weather forecast. It was then that we found out just how much our forecast had changed. We were now looking at 40 to 50 knot winds from the southeast, forecast to happen that night. Lawson Harbor would be the perfect anchorage for that blow. Join us in the next episode for more excitement. We appreciate your support. You are the wind in our sails. New episodes are released every second Sunday evening. Explore our captivating blogs and thrilling videos and contribute to the project at www.sailinginfidels.com. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram for updates, photos, and videos, and track us at www.noforeignland.com. Don't miss out. Stay connected and be part of the incredible journey.